Hello, Alpha Females, and welcome to yet another episode of Alpha Female, the podcast. Today, we are unpacking self-worth, but I'm not alone. I am joined by our resident psychologist, Busi. Welcome, Busi.
Thank you. Hi, Lungi, and hi to all the Alpha Females out there.
So let's get into it as we get into it. When we speak about self-worth, is it linked to our psychological needs like self-esteem, for instance, as per Maslow's hierarchy of needs?
So when we look at self-worth, it's basically having a great understanding of how valuable you are as a human being. So when we look at Maslow's hierarchy, it speaks about the motivations behind human behavior. And we have the five stages, which speaks to your physiological needs. It speaks to safety and security. It speaks to love and belonging, self-esteem, and then the top, which would be the self-actualization. So when we try to then combine the self-worth with self-esteem, they go hand in hand. However, when we look at self-esteem according to Maslow's hierarchy, it speaks of, you know, getting to a level of mastery, of achievement, of self-honor, you know, self-respect. And it goes hand in hand with self-worth because when it comes to self-worth, you engage in those activities that somehow improve how you see yourself, improve things that you are more driven to go for in life. And it's basically, you know, stands where you sort of understand your value as a human being. And even things along the lines of what is it that I feel that I'm deserving of and going for those things and not settling for things that are less than that.
That's so interesting. So my second question would have been how we actually define self-worth, but I think you've touched on it, right? And alluding to some of the things that we deserve. So we often see memes. Shame, winter's coming. We will see memes about people that are lonely, that, you know, they call us our self-worth queens. We must take out our heaters and our blankets because you probably don't have a partner. So most of the time, the concept of self-worth is associated with just love and relationships. But what you've just described seems like it's across the different areas of life. So would you just take us a bit through that on, you know, it being a concept that's just not only in maybe relationships, but permeating in different areas, whether it's work and other parts of life, basically.
So self-worth, in as much as, yes, we like to often speak about it with regards to relationships, or like what you were prompting earlier, winter, wanting to have someone or someone to cuddle with. But when you look at self-worth in different contexts, so this is you now starting to seek for a better understanding of yourself. Looking at self-awareness, working on getting to know yourself, looking at self-acceptance. So these are parts of you that you don't necessarily feel comfortable with people knowing about. But even when striving to get to that self-worthiness, you begin to accept your flaws, you know. You even get to a point where you are no longer even taken aback by those flaws because you begin to love yourself with the good and the bad parts of yourself. And when you look at self-worthiness in different contexts, it's getting to that part of yourself where you are self-actualized, where you accept all of you because it makes up the whole of who you truly are, your uniqueness, and getting to a point where in a room, wherever, in relationships, you teach people how to treat you. In other words, you set the standard of, I'm a good person internally, and therefore I firmly believe that I deserve respect. So then how do I then seek it in my relationships in different contexts? But it needs to start from within
you,
so that you know how to set that standard, and then people are able to rise up to that.
Wow. Mm. I'm going to put that in a bottle somewhere and store it for myself, even. I think we often hear people saying, you teach people how to treat you, but we don't see it in practice. So say, for instance, I appear, because we have personas as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
I appear to be a woman of high value. But like you said, there are flaws within and things that I say I'm working on, or one of our listeners is working on. How do I start addressing those? So in other words, where does valuing yourself start from? Is it from when you are young? And if you are a person, Vele, who just, hey, Mongen, you're like, figgy, you know, I am now in the room and going through life, that's like the perception or the high regard that you hold yourself in. And what happens if maybe you have the opposite of that? Maybe you grew up in a home that, you know, no one really poured into you, believed in you, and so are those going to be the concepts that you then, you know, use to define your worth? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I often say that we all have those unpleasant life experiences that we've all have been a part of.
Mm.
Some people call them the unfair situations or the not so fair situations. Mm. And instead of us as human beings dwelling on our past mistakes and on our childhood stories that we didn't even have much control of, it's always nice to use those as a stepping stone to then, instead of me limiting how I see myself and how I allow people to treat me based on my past experiences, how can I then use that as a mirror to be able to see what to work on?
Mm.
How can I start treating myself differently from how my background used to treat me or used to label me? Which perspective that is different can I begin to see myself with, where I begin to be more respectful to myself, more gentle and sensitive to my needs, and be able to still allow people to live up to those expectations of treating me as a whole human being and not just based on my past and my past mistakes. Also, when having to work towards, you know, remodeling your childhood experiences or even your past judgments, it's really working on shifting away from comparing yourself a lot.
Ah, okay.
You see, the
is
thing
this
about
comparing yourself with others? Okay.
So when you compare yourself with others, it's almost as if you're only fixated on what you don't have or what you lack, as opposed to driving yourself towards what you have. And when you think of self-worth, you work with what you have, because then that creates a positive self-regard. You begin to focus on the positive parts of you. And internally what that does is it brings up a very positive way of seeing the self. So you begin to feel good about yourself. You have a good self-concept of yourself, and somehow that encourages you to want better things in life, to seek out for better things in life. And it somehow gets you into that mode of constantly setting goals, growing, working on yourself, reevaluating what can I work on, what can I change. So it's just some of the ways that you can also try to reverse what you've always known from your past, but trying to work on it.
Yeah.
And these are things also you can work on even in therapy if you have that privilege, you know. But it's also trying to set realistic expectations of yourself. And like always placing yourself at a position of failure.
Yeah.
You know, and even getting to a point where I forgive myself for my past mistakes, and I don't use my past mistakes and my judgment of my past mistakes as how I see myself.
That's so powerful. So you've said two things that I want to go back to. The first one was, you have to start with what you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when you compare, you're literally already setting up yourself for failure because someone is always better than you in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
But in the world that we live in, where we're heavily influenced by social media, where success is defined a certain way as well, how does one then, you know, go back to maybe what I call the heart of gratitude and center themselves again to be like, no, man, I am here. You know, I have this. And you having a Porsche versus me having something else doesn't mean that you are more valuable than I am.
Correct. And I think it brings me back to that distorted perception of self-worthiness then always being determined by what you have or by tangible things.
Yes, yes.
But you see, the thing is that when we take away those shiny, glamorous, tangible things, what do you have left? And so part of building then your self-worth, not on tangible items, but more on you having a relationship with yourself and working on getting to a more actualized position of self, then helps you to somehow work on you as an individual. And it puts you at a position of where you eventually become content, whether you have or you have not. You become content with the good and the bad parts of myself because it makes me become the unique person that I am. It makes me become the best that I am when I use what I have to get to a position where I fulfill my purpose here on earth.
Mm.
You know, we speak of self-actualization being at a position where you are content and you feel like you've worked so much on yourself that now you want to give back.
Mm.
And when we take it back to self-worthiness, it's getting to that extent of that I want to become the best that I am, together with these good and bad experiences of myself, because they make up who I am as a unique individual. So it's not about wanting to appear perfect, but it's making use of all of those parts of your experiences to make the best of the individual that you are, because you are at your best.
Yeah.
When you work with what you have,
yeah.
When you work with the core of who you are,
as opposed to
you know, striving to the social media
image that is
put out there as the benchmark.
Yeah, I love that. It actually reminded me of, I think it was a conversation between a friend of and I, and the question then was if certain things were stripped off of you. So for some of us, we are workaholics, right? Our lives revolve around work.
Yeah.
And that person had asked me that, what if you didn't have it? Like, you didn't have work and that was stripped away from you. What would you do then? So I think questions like that to ourselves also make us think, is then work how I define
my worth.
My
value as a human being.
Yes. Mm. So that's very interesting. And it's something that I hope also our listeners are listening and having a moment of reflection. So how you've spoken a lot about, you know, self-actualization and how everything like comes back to the core of who we are, and acceptance between accepting the good and the bad. So how is also self-worth then linked to self-love?
I think the last time when I was here, we spoke about self-love.
That's why Nibuisa. That's why I'm bringing it back.
Yeah, it's like you know, it's a full circle. Yes, yes.
Moment.
So when we look at self-love, this is you engaging in activities that place you in a position of high regard. So these activities you engage in, they help you to take care of yourself better, be more in tune with yourself, be more in tune with your needs. It's you learning how to take care of yourself, you know, and being gentle with yourself. So when we look at the link between that and self-worth, you then realize that I need to somehow engage in certain activities that will help me be more in tune with myself, activities that will help me have a relationship with myself. And the more I engage in those activities, they will then increase my value. So if you think of a valuable item, you don't just treat it anyhow. There's a level of attention and care that you give it. So that's how it is when you begin to engage in self-love, because then you start treating yourself as someone of value. And the more you engage in those activities that increase you to love yourself, to be more understanding of yourself, to take care of yourself, you get to that level where you start believing that I deserve better. I am internally good. I strive to somehow treat myself a certain way, and I also believe that others should also do the same, and not in an arrogant or pompous manner. Not in that manner, but it goes back to self-respect. So if I treat you with gentleness and with care, then I expect the same as well back to me. And when you look at that relationship between self-worthiness and self-love, it's interconnected, because you are somehow taking a deeper look at yourself, a deeper way of understanding yourself, and it's putting you at a position where you now begin to value yourself more and more from you. Instead of depending on others to teach your value. Because then what happens again when people stop? Does that make you question your value? Does that make you less of a valuable human being? So the act of self-worthiness and self-love then puts it back as it being your responsibility, as opposed to it being a responsibility of others.
And we often see it even in a work context, right? For us women, particularly women of color, we've been raised to be very grateful. Hey, nyabonga shem. So apologetic. You are actually the most, sometimes, super qualified for the role. You know what you're talking about. You put in the work, but you still don't believe that you deserve a certain amount of money, right? So in deserving certain things, how does that link to like belief? Because I think sometimes people will say it, no man, I deserve better. Hey, you know, they were dribbled there in the relationship department. Even dribbled at work, where you didn't negotiate or stand up for yourself on the salary that you know you actually could get. But in reality, psychologically, that thing of actually believing that you deserve it has not landed as yet. So how do we close that gap?
We close it, as you put it, by believing more in ourselves. But again, we cannot manifest what we haven't sowed or cultivated. So in other words, I cannot see myself beyond the level of thinking that I attach to who I am as a person. So if you are engaging in patterns that are self-sabotaging or in behavior that is toxic for the self, you will forever feel like you don't deserve certain things or like this role is too big for me. But if I begin to start thinking of myself differently in a more positive way, it builds up my self-esteem. I begin to trust myself more because I'm engaging even in activities that make me also focus on the things that I do well. And as a result, you begin to feel like I am deserving of certain positions in society. I can do it.
Yeah. This makes me think of a book. It's called Ikigai. You know that concept where it's a mash pretty much of your vocation, your purpose, and your passion. And one of the things that they speak about in the book is almost allowing yourself to go through the motions and flowing in the activity. So if you know like that you enjoy painting or art or singing, totally being immersed in it. So you remember how good it feels, how good you are in doing it without external factors, without distractions. True. And the more you do that, the more you have room to be, to, you know, you're in the center of your ikigai and therefore you could be more. Sure. When are you writing your book? talk about that. But let's also take it back to like what you just spoke about now. We often see people when they think they don't deserve something, even when the thing is presented, like right at their feet, they tend to self-sabotage. So it could be you've had, like you've said that a big element of it is acceptance. Yes. But say in the past, I've had numerous not so good men. And then now there's a great guy. Everyone can see that this is a great guy for you, but you just can't let go. You're now, you know, poking him. He's green, but you're like painting him with red flags. Because you're just like, I know all men disappoint me. Similarly, it could be a job, right? You've been working hard, you've been putting all the hard work, and now there's a big role, and this role is probably maybe a global role or a regional role, and you've been working for it. Now the job is there and you're just like, I don't have this, I'm missing 10%, you know, so and so could be better. So does it happen at times where you just self-sabotage because you don't value yourself, even when people can see it now externally, but when I don't, you know, is self-sabotaging a thing that we should look out for in behavior?
It's important that we look out for that, because these things manifest themselves in repeated patterns in our lives. So if something happens all the time, it can be, as you put it, in having a good guy who presents himself. He checks all the boxes, but you're still fixated on your previous relationship or previous experiences in your relationships, or even having the job that you've worked your entire life to get to. And it's here, it's presenting itself in front of you. And then because of feeling afraid to change and the fear of the unknown, then it's taken away from you and given to the other person. So I think it's very important that we are aware of the self-sabotage. And it's important that we learn from those behaviors, because they are, you know, a combination of our past and also our childhood experiences, where if ever you did grow up in a home where perhaps you were constantly pulled down, called names, made to feel like you're not good enough, you know, all of that impacts on your self-esteem or even in you being able to believe in yourself. So it's important that we look out for that, because we will always sell ourselves short. And I always say to my clients or patients, it's important to pay attention to those things that repeat themselves in our lives. You see, when something happens over and over again as a cycle, it's a sign that do you choose to remain there and continue to live off the same issue, the same challenge, or are you choosing to use that experience as a way of growing and becoming better than? So self-sabotage is important that we look out for it and we begin to also go for what we fully deserve.
Yeah.
You know, we've got examples of many women in society that have broken down barriers.
Yeah.
They didn't let their past experiences or their childhood somehow keep them to make them feel like they'll never be deserving of what another person who's not of color is deserving of. But we can do it. It's been proven many times. So what's stopping us from also breaking the barriers, putting aside our fears and anxieties and taking the risk?
Yeah, taking the leap.
And taking that leap of faith and going for it. And I think it's important to also have a community of people that will either mentor you or that will push you to think different, to go for uncharted territories, because that's where you start discovering parts of yourself that you didn't know.
Yes, and I think also, especially as women, this is where the value of great friendship comes in. Good friends will also call you out. Sometimes they give you advice that you don't want to listen to, but boy, when you reflect, you will then see the value of that advice post maybe the ordeal, and then having people to support you through it.
Yeah.
Because it's not easy facing yourself.
True.
Yeah,
true.
It's not very easy facing yourself.
Yeah.
So now I've realized that I'm in a pattern. It's going down. I'm in the weeds of my pattern. Is it that, you know, if I have the privilege, I go to therapy and address the root cause of why I keep repeating that pattern? Or is it maybe trying to understand what's, you know, the driving behavior to, you know, leading me into that pattern? I have a good thing, but I keep losing it because I think I don't deserve it.
Look, if you do have that privilege of therapy, then it's a great vehicle. But I mean, if we look at the society we live in, therapy has become a luxury. But what I often like to say to my clients is have a look at, you know, some of your past relationships. And these don't have to be necessarily intimate relationships, because it can be relationships with colleagues, friends, you know. Just even your relationships with yourself, because that is also an important relationship. And try to look at what have been those reoccurring patterns. Is it always about what the other person did to you? Or could it be also possibly about what could I have also contributed for things to occur or go the way they did? And to also think about it, what is it about myself that allowed me to allow another person to treat me in that manner? Or what is it about myself that keeps on engaging in these patterns of behavior? How does it serve me? How is it making me become a better person? Or am I engaging in these certain patterns because I'm enabling an unresolved issue through me engaging in these patterns on another person? Because sometimes we shy away from our own failures and our own struggles, and then we project these onto others.
Other people. Yeah.
And so when you begin to allow yourself to go to those blind spots and parts of yourself that you are not comfortable with, you begin to challenge yourself and work through parts of you that have stood in the way of you becoming at your best, you know, and you being able to value yourself. It helps you have better relationships. It helps how you see yourself and even how you see others and how you are in certain relationships. So it's always important to evaluate the self, work through those patterns. And it's those little steps by trying, you know. Yes, you won't get it right the first time. I mean, these are habits that have been inbuilt for many, many years. But the more you try to do the opposite of what you've always been doing, bit by bit, you will eventually get there.
Yeah.
And it will put you at a level where you no longer feel like you are not deserving of good things in life, but you begin to feel like I am deserving of good things in life because I'm a person of value.
Mm.
I am a good person despite my past experiences and what I've been through, but I am deserving of goodness in life. And all of that, you know, ties into also self-love.
Yeah. I hear you and fully agree, and I think understand. I think it's just tough for us to kind of face ourselves. But according to what you said, you can actually only be better once you start doing that.
Yes.
You can lead better at work because I once attended a conference and one of the CIOs said some people are grown-up seven-year-olds. Pretty much, because they come with their childhood trauma to the boardrooms and the person is just throwing tantrums and stuff because they have all of those things unresolved. So if you work on that yourself, you become a better person just in general and in the things that you attract.
And I think it shifts away the us imposing the responsibility that it should be resolved by other people.
Oh, yes.
Because we sometimes feel that way, that maybe because I always had issues in my relationships.
Yes.
I always expect the other person to be the one that will always affirm me or validate me. But it's not the responsibility of the other person. It's on you to validate yourself. So it always helps when we try to work through those blind spots to say, okay, maybe now I see why certain things don't go right in certain relationships.
Yes.
Perhaps I need to take back that responsibility and that expectation and place it back on me to avoid me having so many disappointments in many of my relationships.
Yeah. And I guess it's taking the power back as well. But we're not saying don't praise people. If you're a leader at work, please tell people if they've done well.
Yes, definitely.
It's important. Recognize them. Appreciate them.
Yes.
If you're married, appreciate your husband.
Of course.
I don't want you coming to offer female getting divorced.
Please.
But I think it's important what you're saying, because if you yourself are already validated, then it's just the add-on.
Yes.
You're not making the next person solely responsible for
validating
you and your being.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to ask, is there such a thing as maybe like toxic self-worth? So these are maybe the people that hold themselves like in high regard. Like, okay, you value yourself, but
come back to it.
Yes. You are in Sky 78. We live in on Earth.
Definitely there is. And I think we all know
one or two people.
Or behind calling them narcissists or whatnot. But I think there is. And the danger in that is always feeling like you have arrived. Or always feeling like wherever you go, you always have to command a presence and be treated at a certain standard.
Yes.
But you see, self-worthiness is not shoving it in people's faces. You don't even have to say it. You command it because it's who you are. And people rise up to that level. And that's when you see that it's not forced. You are not making it up to say that this is what I deserve or this is my level of standards. And so when people get to that toxic, high regard, grandiose, pompous part, it's very hard to work through them because they don't feel like they're doing anything wrong.
It's literally a bias. I'm right, you're wrong. Everybody else is wrong.
So or you know, they are the victim.
Yes.
And everyone else is always, you know, making them feel a certain way or oppressing them.
Yes, let's go into victimship, because I think victimship often is seen as someone that you have to feel sorry for. It's never seen as someone who's actually on the toxic side of self-worth. Mm. So how do you then also recognize that, you've been a victim all of your ordeals, pretty much.
Yeah.
'Cause we have people like that at work, in you know, certain encounters as well. So just explain a bit on how that shows up.
Mm. Look, we are not at all undermining being the victim or being the one who is hurt or damaged or oppressed. Of course, there is value in that.
Mm.
And sometimes that's why I also shy away from labels in therapy.
Yes, yes.
Because of that. That once we label or put it there as you being a victim, at times we don't know when to shift and grow out of that stage of being a victim, because you cannot be one forever. Mm. The same as grief, you cannot grieve forever.
Mm.
There is a transition that happens. So even when playing that role of a victim, you get to the transition where you take your power back and you are able to no longer see yourself as the person that was hurt or that was shoved aside or somehow treated badly. And at times, I think some people don't know when to stop and tend to maybe use the victim mentality as a way of manipulating and getting things done their way,
or
people feeling sorry for them.
Yeah.
So then that's where it often becomes too extreme. And at times I think people sometimes don't know that they do that.
Mm.
And it's always helpful to bring the person back to, you know, that don't dwell here forever.
Mm.
Take back your power as an individual and somehow think of how better would life be if I would no longer have to see myself as the victim, or how better would life be if I were able to climb out of this position where I take back ownership of my life and I no longer have to depend on others to affirm me or to make me feel safe.
Yeah, it very much sounds like it's also a forever journey, to be quite honest, because we do go through certain experiences and those shape us.
Yeah.
But it sounds like we really need to sit down with ourselves through them so we don't attach our worth to those situations and give them too much power over who we are at our core.
Mm. And that's where you get to the level of acceptance.
Mm.
So when we even look at being the victim or stages of grief, you get to that level of acceptance where you no longer live somehow limited by the loss or by the hurt
or the situation.
Sure. You are able to, remain and acknowledge the emotions, the pain, the sadness that comes with it, and grow from that and have a better understanding of how it happened, and using that experience to somehow enable you to become a stronger person and even be able to help others through that experience. And it takes us back again to the self-actualization, where you now get to a point where you are content.
Mm.
So it's not about a situation now happening to you, but for you, so that you can get to this level of understanding of the self, but also using your bad and good experiences in being able to help others. Mm.
Love it. So, Busi, what do you want our listeners to take out of this conversation today? Just as we unpacked a whole lot of things, but what are some of the nuggets that you want them to think about when thinking about or reflecting after this podcast about their own value and definition of their worth.
Yeah. I think I want to put them at a part where they learn to forgive themselves for their past experiences and past failures. And by past, I mean even something that literally happened 5 minutes ago. And not using that as how you define or see yourself. Because that is an episode. It's just something that happened, you know. It's isolated, but it doesn't mean that that is who you are. And I've seen many people limit themselves because of their past experiences and their past failures, and letting that limit them from being able to see themselves as people of value. And just to close things off, think about that valuable china set in your household. The one that your mother never used to just serve to anyone in your household. It was specially put aside
for the pastors. Guests.
And but liken that to yourself.
Because
that china set is not treated in any kind of way. It is somehow treated in a valuable way. It is not put in any kind of conditions that are random, but you take care of it. You somehow put it of value. Because it is not just anything, it's something rare. So when we talk about self-worth, think of yourself as that valuable china set and carry yourself with that respect, with that dignity, you know, with that self-love and self-acceptance. And that in itself will create that level of feeling valuable and of worth.
I love that. Well, it was lovely having you. There's actually a Zulu saying, it is iphathise okwesitsha esihlalaphi kuroom divider. So you can't manifest something that you don't believe you can manifest. Thank you so much, Busi. You are a resident. We can't wait to have you again. To our alpha females, till next time.
Thank you. Bye.